Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners to America's Great Loop Cruisers weekly blog radio show. With us today are Steve as usual, and Steve does the technical work and works on the discussion forum, and I'm Janice Cromer, and I'm the director of AGLCA. First of all, I'd like to thank our annual sponsors for their wonderful support, Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications. For those non-members who are listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, which of course encompasses the Atlantic and Gulf intracoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, or AGLCA as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share that sense of adventure and curiosity about America's Great Loop. Our association's primary purpose is to give you information and enhance the overall experience of those interested or dreaming about or doing the Great Loop. Our website is www.greatloop.org, and we'd love for you to visit and become a member. I'm happy to welcome our guest host this week, Jim Stark, the Executive Director of the Gulf Intracoastal Canal Association. Jim will talk about the status of this waterway, which of course is integral to America's Great Loop. Anytime during the show, if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, the toll-free number is 877-497-1815. Welcome, Jim. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Janice, and thanks for having me back again this year. It was a pleasure to get a call from you last week and invite me.
Thank you very much. I know you took time out of a very, very busy weekend to be with us.
Well, thanks.
Well, why don't you start with the mission of the Gulf Intracoastal Canal Association?
Yeah, I thought that'd be a good review from where we were last year.
Sure.
Our mission has remained the same. The association is a trade association. We have about 200 dues-paying members, and I count another 200 stakeholders and partners that I work with to ensure that the 1,100-mile GIWW, the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway, from Texas to Florida is maintained, operated, and improved to provide a safe, efficient, economical, and environmentally sound transportation route. And that waterway, of course, serves petrochemicals, facilities and transporters, refineries, farming, mines, ports, commercial fisheries, and, of course, recreational boaters.
Do you have any idea of the percentage of traffic that is actually recreational boaters?
You know, I looked in preparation for this. I did look at some of the Corps of Engineers waterway statistics, and they have a website that provides very detailed statistics on traffic. And they count about 310,000 transits of the GIWW, again, all the way from Florida to Texas. So I'm looking at the whole picture.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to break that down by the they break it down by drafts. So if you look at the drafts of the vessels, it's pretty clear where the breakpoint is for recreational boaters versus commercial entities. And my estimate would be that about three-quarters of that 310,000 are commercial. So, somewhere in the range of 75 to 80,000 would be recreational boaters.
That's a very, very large number, my goodness. And, of course, that takes into Texas, too, into consideration, correct?
Oh, it sure does. And of course, clearly in the reaches of the GIWW in Florida, you've got a lot of transit of recreational boaters and fishermen in the GIWW to get out to their where they recreate.
Right.
The GIWW is truly an industrial canal, and that's what it was built for, but it serves a multitude of purposes. But I think one of the important pieces of this and an important contribution to our country is the 112 million tons of commercial cargo that are moved on the waterway. And what that does is just takes off thousands upon thousands of trucks and rail cars that would be transiting our highways and causing congestion and adding pollution. So I think it's important to realize that, you know, the waterway is there for all of us to use, but the way we use it is clearly an economical and efficient and environmentally sound way to move commodities.
I'm not quite sure how to word this. Is cargo transportation a relatively clean way to move transport versus, you know, trucks and trains?
It is. Barge transportation, moving commodities, large amounts of bulk cargoes, oil, petrochemicals, aggregates, agricultural products, are all moved much more efficiently and actually safer and more environmentally sound than by trucks or rail. Rail and trucks use more fuel than a barge does per ton, and thus would contribute a little bit more pollution to the air than a barge does.
Uh-huh.
It is a very, very clean and green industry at this point.
And quiet.
Well, it is. Unless you live right on the waterway.
I'm just thinking of the noise of the trains going by and the trucks on the interstates. It can be very overwhelming.
Well, of course. But, you know, those of us who've been on the water for a long time, you know, just kind of like to look up and see that maritime traffic moving. I think
it
points to a strong maritime nation, which I know President Obama has said that's what we are. We're a maritime nation. And that means we need strong ports and we need strong waterways.
Well, of course, we're living in Charleston, which is a huge port city, and we love to go to the waterfront downtown and just watch cargo ships go by, the barges. It's truly amazing. It's quite the sight.
Don't like them so much when we're on the water, but...
Well, you get used to dodging them. We're going this next week to the Charleston Harbor Marina, and that, of course, you have to cross the Charleston Harbor. And it can get challenging with the cargo ships. You just have to really know what you're doing and go very, very slowly.
Well, you certainly do.
It's quite the sight to sit at the Charleston Harbor Marina and at night and watch the barges go by and the cargo ships. It's just beautiful. Why don't you tell us about some of the challenges you faced this year?
Well, this year was... not unlike others. We had both high and low water events, and that affects clearly the Mississippi River quite a bit. Being on the coast, we're a little bit insulated by that, from that. But
when you say low water, how low does it usually? I mean, what is the lowest it's gotten?
Well, it's all relative, but the gauge readings in New Orleans on the Mississippi were down to about 2 feet again this year. And that just makes it difficult for navigation interests, particularly the blue water fleets, the larger freighters that go up to Baton Rouge. But for the barge fleets and the barge companies, we look at draft restrictions and reducing the number of barges in a typical tow. On the intercoastal waterway, the most you'll see in a typical tow is six, and we call that a six-pack. But on the Mississippi River, you can get up to 35, 36, up to 40-some barges. And when the water's low or particularly high, it makes navigation more difficult and less safe. So we work very closely with our partners at the Coast Guard and the Corps to put in voluntary restrictions and regulations that will help reduce the possibility of accidents. And reduce the potential of grounding. So we push fewer barges that are loaded lighter. Of course, that ends up costing someone down the line, either the shipper or the owner of the cargo themselves will have to pay more for a second barge trip. So those are a challenge But we actually, this year was a lot better than 2011 when we had a lot of groundings in the St. Louis area.
Did you really?
About that. We also worked closely with, again, our partners at the Corps and the Coast Guard as Tropical Storm Karen threatened the Gulf Coast. The good news is it dissipated before it hit. So what we were able to accomplish is remove quite a bit of barge and tow traffic and commercial traffic from around the New Orleans area, and to make sure that the area bounded by the new flood control system that the Corps has built over the past several years following Katrina would be safe, and that, you know, a barge or a ship that perhaps could break loose during a storm wouldn't threaten that that flood control system, the levees and dive wall. The challenge there is there's a lot of traffic. As you know, in Charleston, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we work closely through our members and through the Coast Guard and the Corps to get everyone out way ahead of the storm into safe harbors up the rivers or to the west to Texas when the storm is hitting in the New Orleans or Alabama or Mississippi area.
I know there were a lot of heavy winds in Florida this year. Did that have any impact on the waterway?
It did. In the land cut between Destin and Panama City, we had a dike failure, a dike that was used to hold dredge materials, dredges, the dredge material that comes out of the GIWW in that area. The dike failed due to the heavy rains and caused essentially a closure of the GIW in that area. We were able to get a few barges through, and then the Corps closed it for several weeks, especially to recreational boaters, and repaired the dike, and then it happened again when the tropical storms came through. So it was a challenge, and that's just par for the course of operating in that area.
What was the alternative for the ships when the dike was closed?
I'm sorry?
What was the alternative? Was there any other way to get through the waterway?
Well, there isn't. And what happens is shippers need to make decisions about shifting their cargoes to tanker trucks or to rail. And in particular, some of the, I think it was a energy plant in Panama City was very dependent on that fuel, and that's exactly what they had to do, to truckloads. And that's more expensive, and eventually will hit us all in the pocket.
Sure.
In the wallet.
It always.
Yeah.
Okay, I think if you don't mind, Jim, we're going to break for a quick commercial from our Admiral sponsor, Skipper Bob Publications.
Did you know that every mile of the Great Loop is covered by Skipper Bob Guides? Its mile-by-mile format is a great planning tool and essential at the helm. On the most popular routes and side trips, Skipper Bob covers preparation, navigation, bridges and locks, and the best places to visit. Skipper Bob Guides are updated each year, and its website keeps you current with navigation alerts and cruising news. To check it out, go to skipperbob.net. Skipper Bob is a proud Admiral sponsor of AGLCA.
Okay, Jim, let's get back to Washington now and government. Tell us about the Water Resources Bill and where Congress stands on it.
Well, right now it's called the Water Resources Reform and Development Act, and that is the new name for the old WRDA bill, which provides funding for waterways, and it's critical to maintaining the intercoastal waterways and rivers infrastructure as well as some of our ports. And our industry is very interested in getting the bill through this year and getting some funding for very important infrastructure projects. Right now, the bill is in Congress, and I believe they are working today, and then we'll recess and come back. But we're encouraged that there are a couple of aspects of the bill that we're very interested in and are actually encouraged that we may make some progress. And first is the Inland Waterways Trust Fund is the way that the Corps of Engineers gets federal funding and a user's cost share piece of the pie to fund major infrastructure replacement projects on the rivers. It's particularly locks and dams that help us move down the rivers. And in Louisiana alone, we have 13 lock or flood control structures that are dependent on that kind of funding. And what we have in the past few years, the appropriation level for that fund has been about $170 million. $85 million is the federal share, and $85 is the industry share.
Uh-huh.
That's collected through a fuel tax of 20 cents per gallon. And what our industry has done is looked at that situation and felt that it's woefully underfunded. And we've proposed through our congressional delegations that about $380 million is needed each year to start replacing critical infrastructure on the rivers and the waterways, the coastal waterways. And we have actually suggested that we raise our industry fuel tax somewhere between 6 and 9 cents a gallon to help pay for our share of that. And we think that we have some relatively strong sponsors in Congress this year, and we hope that change will go through. Additionally, and I know my colleague Brad Pickle at the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway Association.
Yes, we're hoping Brad will be on next week.
Yeah, he's also interested in a provision that directs the Corps of Engineers to take a real hard look and study the operations and maintenance needs of both of our waterways. Because,
uh-huh.
You know, it's okay to replace the infrastructure, but then you've got to maintain it. And we feel strongly that the Corps of Engineers also doesn't have enough money from Congress to maintain the waterways properly. And that's, well, the proof is in the pudding. The rains that caused that dike failure in Panama City or near Panama City may have been prevented with adequate O&M. So we're keeping our fingers crossed, and we're beating down the doors of Congress to hopefully get that act passed this year and get the proper funding in the Corps' hands so that we can continue to use the waterway economically and efficiently.
Well, I know all of our loopers are behind your efforts, and we appreciate them. Now,
well,
a very focal subject in our discussion forum has been NOAA and the Magenta Line issue. Could you give us a little background and where we are with that?
Well, as you probably know already, that NOAA is proposing, in fact, I think they've removed it from current charts. And the reason, I think, is a good one. You know, the magenta line has not been updated. It kind of suggests a sailing line that may not be safe in many places along the waterways. And a few days ago, I was looking at some of their examples of that, and you can clearly see it's on the wrong side of a buoy or it goes right over a shoal.
Uh-huh.
And I think the idea is if you have that out there and people use it and they're doing something that they shouldn't be, probably not a good thing. So I don't know that NOAA or anyone has the resources to keep that line up as a true sailing line, as a navigational aid. So I think the suggestion is that rather than mislead and fall into a situation where the line has to be constantly updated, they are planning to remove it. Now, I can see that from our standpoint, I can see that our mariners, I'm pretty sure they already have a sailing line based on years of experience. They know where the intracoastal waterway is. What's important to us are the mile markers, and that's how we fix our positions. I'm so many miles west of Harvey Lock or so many miles east of Harvey Lock. And
uh-huh.
Harvey Lock in New Orleans is the zero point for the intracoastal waterway. We measure east
to
west. So that's the way we work it. And I think our position is that, quite frankly, we're not opposed to removing it.
Removing it.
On the other hand, I can certainly see why recreational boaters who may not often be as familiar with the waterway as we are would want that, to show, you know, a suggested route. And I think the compromise maybe is that if it is put in there, then clearly NOAA must state on the chart that this is suggested, and don't use it as a navigational aid. Just use it as a suggested route for
suggested route. Yeah, I mean, if it's going to be wrong, we should take it out. I mean, that could be
correct.
A dangerous situation. But I think it's a matter of publicity to let voters know it's just a suggestion. You know, it's not critically, this is the way you must go.
Correct. And I'm not sure where they'll end up on that. To our members in the Gulf Intracoastal Canal Association, we put out a short survey that NOAA came up with, and it may have answered that as well. But the consensus was, well, we probably don't need it.
Okay, great. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about? Are you having any annual conference this year, or is that not in the planning stages?
Oh, we are. We'll be in New Orleans again this year from August 7th to August 9th at the Westin.
Okay.
And if you all are interested, we have a vast range of members. I would say it is clearly dominated by the towing and barge industry, but shipyard owners, we have suppliers, we have all kinds of folks that have joined, and I would love to have recreational boaters aboard.
Okay, I appreciate all you've told us. Is there anything else you'd like to add, or should we just say thank you very much and we'll talk to you next year?
There's one other thing. Just looking, I will talk to you next year about this one, but in August of 2015, to mark your calendar, the Corps of Engineers will close the Inner Harbor Navigation Canal lock, which would be your Cruisers Association's entree into the GIWW from the Mississippi River. And that's going to close for about 45 to 60 days if they replace those gates. So if you're looking for a summer cruise and want to get through into the intracoastal from the Mississippi, you won't have a way to do it.
Okay, that's interesting to know. When is that scheduled for?
That's August 2015. You've got plenty of time, but it's something we'll be keeping an eye on because the only other alternate route is to use the Tennessee Tom Bigby, and that adds about 20 days to our trip.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you for letting us know that. We'll keep abreast of the situation. Thankfully, most of our boaters aren't in that area until, you know, late October, but, again, we will keep in mind. And, well, thank you very much, Jim. Good luck to you, and we hope to have, again, your counterpart, Brad Pickle, next week for Thanksgiving. We won't be having a show, but hopefully the week after. And if anyone wants to get in touch with Jim Stark, you can find their website. And, Jim, what is that website?
It's www.gicaonline.com.
Okay, thank you very much, and that's it for this week. And have a nice Thanksgiving this week, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you. You too, Janice and Steve.
Bye.
Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.